Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber. To Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media. Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health. Instagram, at Mainstream Mental Health. Twitter, at Mainstream MENTL. And search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
Welcome to Mental Health Perspective with your host, Dr. John Huber and Kristen Sonata Walker. You can learn more about them by going to their websites. First of all, we'll go to Kristen's website at mentalhealthnewsradio.com. And then you can also learn more about Dr. John Huber by going to his website at mainstreammentalhealth.org. Dr. Huber, it's Walker. Welcome to your own program. How are you both doing this week?
Amazing.
I have to come up with an A word now for how great I'm doing because you all use that. So I'll just say awesome because that's California where I grew up.
Excellent. Well, in our time today.
Awesome. I like it. Yeah.
We're going to cover a number of different topics. First off, we are honoring the national holiday known as Dr. John Huber's birthday today. So one of the So one of the first questions I have for you both is, what are the psychological aspects of birthdays, and why are some people either overly excited or in fear of their birthdays? I don't want anything to do with it. We'll start with you, Dr. Huber.
That was not what I was told it was going to be. Okay. Well, some people have fear of certain numbers specifically. And, you know, as they approach those numbers, whether it's the fear of number 13 or whatever, you know, it makes people uncomfortable. And, you know, the interesting thing is today on May 11th is also the oldest American man is now 112, and he lives here in Austin. So, you know, I'm sharing a great birthday. He was in World War II. He served for 3 years during World War II, and he lives not very far from my office right here. So he's had news media out there. So because of that, I haven't gotten and I haven't felt the love of the media today. So, you know, I can understand that. Though he's more than twice my age, so.
And we're media, so you're feeling the love right now.
I am, finally. Yeah, I appreciate that, guys, really.
There's some people who really love to who love to go crazy. Why are some people, you know, just, you said it's about a numbers thing, but some people don't want anyone to know about their birthdays. They want to kind of keep them in the DL. Is there any particular reason why somebody would probably not want anything to do with that, want to talk about it, or to kind of keep it really quiet?
Well, you know, as we look at things, I'm sorry, go ahead, Kristen, go for it.
I was going to say, I think that it used to be with women, you didn't want anyone to know how old you were, and that seems to not be reality as much as it used to. I never hear that, and I'm shouting from the rooftops, it's my birthday, I'm going to be 49 or whatever, but I think that was a lot of it, was the perception that, oh, don't give your age because then you're not as capable. The older you get, there's all those stereotypes about aging. So that was one reason. You, Dr. Huber?
Well, that is part of it. I mean, if you look in society, what happens as we age, you know, people think you become obsolete. So nobody wants to be obsolete. So we want to try and at least have that perception in our own mind that that we are fresh and new and on top of things. And nobody can be fresh and new and on top of every single thing. So, you know, it's kind of a weird thought process, but the reality of it is, you know, you get an old computer and it wears out, and we perceive ourselves in that same perspective instead of thinking of ourselves as, you know, these dynamic change agents that are out there in our society, and experience makes us better until we just can't function. And, you know, you're 112 years old, enjoy your cup of coffee on your porch and let the media come by and wave at you, you know?
Got it. Well, this week also there's another big story that came out, which is that the World Health Organization is planning in June to classify video game addiction as a disease. So based on the research, they're going to do it. My particular case, I am incurable because I definitely have a disease. I love to play games. So I want to know from both of your perspectives, what does this mean? Do you think that people will now be able to, psychiatrists will be able to prescribe drugs now and say, you know, you've got a disease of video game addiction, so take these pills, I'll make you stop. What does this mean when a condition is all of a sudden is classified as a disease? And we'll start with you, Dr. Huber.
Well, I don't think that the psychiatrists need a diagnosis like that to prescribe or to assign treatment and that type of stuff to individuals. If they have a medical necessity for medication or intervention, it, just because we don't have a specific name for it doesn't mean that they can't help that individual. I mean, there's all sorts of NOS or not otherwise stated type diagnoses that we can have out there. And we do have, you have general anxiety disorder, you have all these different things that are just kind of a catch-all for different types of disorders. So you could have a diagnosis of, you know, an addiction. It doesn't necessarily have to be medication or alcohol based. And the reality of it is, though, you've got people who can't get up and walk away from their video games, and it ruins their lives, and it comes down ultimately to their functionality. And I've been asked several times this week about this, and it's like, is this a joke? Are they trying to make fun of people? And, you know, there's millions of Americans who can have a glass of wine at dinner or lunch for that matter and get up and walk away. But there's a certain percentage, about another, you know, 15 to 20% of our population that can't. They sit down and they have that glass of wine and they have to finish the whole bottle or something's not clicking right in their brain. And that's the difference between video games and maybe they can be a fanatic, like somebody who watches the NFL and they catch every single NFL game all week long. But when football season's over, they don't do that. They don't have to sit in front of their TV. Well, these people may play video games like that, but they can get up and go to church. They can get up and go to work. They can have interactions with their families. They don't have any types of issues like that. And all of a sudden, you know, one day they get up and they can't walk away from it. That's when the addiction kicks in.
Right, exactly. Like your kids are screaming, they haven't been fed, you know, your dog hasn't been out of the house to go to the bathroom for 12 hours. And I know people that that do this, and they're called teenagers. No, I'm kidding.
Yes, that's true.
Well,
I mean, the Austin Bomber did it. He came out long enough to get food and would walk back into his room. I mean, it was documented. Yeah. His family stated this. And it's part of that developmental mind that hasn't established the ability to set their own limits. This is before we get into the addictive personality type. That brain has not matured enough to be able to set limits like that. And that's why kids need parents to set limits.
So, right. Do you think, for both of you, that people who play video games, are their brains rewired in any capacity? Because if you look at the games today and you compare them to the games 20 years ago,
is there enough activity happening on the screen today that actually adds a sense of realism that makes the perspective of the person playing feel like they're in a real world? Whereas 20 years ago, you could sit and play Pac-Man and know that, you know, it's such a basic electronic game that you weren't completely enthralled or wrapped into the game compared to where you are today. So I was wondering if I could ask both of you guys that question. I'm wondering if the games of today could be psychologically more detrimental if you become addicted to them.
Well, my take on that is an emphatic yes. Yeah, exactly. An emphatic yes on that one. I mean, the game Pac-Man is a little round circle with a pizza cut out, eating little ghosts floating around. And today we're gutting people with knives and seeing them pull out the innards in full detail and, driving and crashing your car into people and killing them. I mean, there's a huge difference in how real these games are today as opposed to when we were playing Centipede. So, of course, that's going to have an effect, in my humble opinion.
Got it.
Hey, I saw War Games. Come on.
Yeah.
That's real.
Play
that's
a
real.
Game? Yeah.
Definitely pretty good. All right. Well, there's another story that is on the horizon. Well, actually came out. It is I'd say, unusual story about stalking. An individual was very upset at her ex-boyfriend, decided to send him 65,000 texts in about a month, said that she wanted to drink his blood. Now, I don't know who this individual is, but I do not appreciate people taking my playbook and using it for their own purposes, and I'm just a little upset, and I know that I got hacked into. So.
Okay, I got to jump in there because a lot of people don't know who Ryan is. Ryan's my producer, and he goes out and he tries to get people to come on my show or for me to be on their show. And his theory is that he's going to keep asking them no matter how many times they say no until one of two things happen. Either they finally just agree to let me on, or they get a restraining order, in which case he'll stop.
That's what we have. So I guess at least another question, what is the psychology behind stalking? And also, you know, there are people who stalk their ex-boyfriends or girlfriends on Facebook. If you're stalking someone on Facebook, is that a prelude to something more sinister? I mean, is there behavior that you could be doing right now that is not necessarily dark, but it leads to something where it could be leading to something or reveal something that maybe you might want to see someone as far as your stalking activities go? I'll start with you, Ms. Kristen.
Well, I was going to say pass to Dr. Huber because he'll know the reasons behind that, but I will say this. You know what? Edit this, obviously. I'm going to do a Jeopardy pass or whatever game is a pass to you first, and then I'll answer, Dr.
Sure,
Huber.
And we'll go to you, Dr. Huber.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people are very curious about other people in general. They think, hey, this is a person I might want to friend, and I'm going to go look through their Facebook and their Instagram and anything they've got public to see if maybe I want to friend them before I actually do. And what we start finding out is that's a relatively normal position to take. What's bad is when, for example, you actually did have a real romantic relationship with somebody, and for whatever reason, you guys broke up, but you as an individual were never able to let go of that individual. You weren't able to say goodbye and move on. And now that stalking takes on a whole nother level, just like if you've never had a romantic relationship with an individual and somehow you think that it's all they got to do is meet me and they'll fall deeply in love with me, and like movie stars have had. I mean, you know, Madonna back in the 80s had somebody jump over her 20-foot fence, and one of her bodyguards finally had to shoot the person to keep him from coming into the house, and it was a very scary thing for her. And you don't know who that person is, but that is a little bit more than just being a fan and caring about her music and her movies and things like that. That's somebody who is obsessed. And that obsession and that obsessive behavior is the dangerous part that we have to worry about, whether it's, like I said before, you broke up with that person or they broke up with you and you weren't ready yet. and you've got this thing, you know, you have different degrees of it. If I can't have her, nobody else can, or she just doesn't, she forgot what it was like to be with me. She fell out of love, and I've got to show her the real side of love and what I am and this kind of stuff. It is pretty scary for a lot of people to think of that as a possibility. But every time, you know, you meet somebody and you start to get romantically involved with them, you have to consider, what is this relationship going to be like if it breaks up, if it falls apart? And it's basically planning and trying to, look at a perspective that we don't often look at. And I know that, there have been times in my life, I love my wife, I'm happily married, but people have made advances to me, and actually she's told me of people who've made advances to her, and we have to kind of look at that and go, wow, I'm kind of honored that somebody thinks that highly of me, but the reality of it is I'm in a vested relationship that I don't want to have anything happen to, so we have to cut that off. And when you tell people things like that, you never know what kind of a response you're going to get from them, and it can be kind of scary.
True. I can say in my personal experience, I've seen different behaviors, and it also can go with age range. I mean, in my 20s, I somehow thought that there were no cell phones, obviously, in my 20s, and my boyfriend was not home yet, and I was sitting in my car after driving 3 hours to get to Beverly Hills, and I thought that if I continued to write notes saying, I'm here, I'm sitting in the car, and sticking him in his mail slot, that would somehow make him get home sooner, apparently, and it did not. And when he finally did come home, he had this pile of notes, and his mother was like looking at me like, who is my son dating? So there's that, and I never did that again.
Well, you learned, and that's the important part. You know, if you don't learn from that, then.
Exactly. I stopped doing that. And then I had a programmer that worked for me who was in his 30s and had kids. And he ended up, he was clearly a sociopath. There were many, many things that happened. And that was a diagnosis for him. But he would go so far as to hack into my server. And when one of his girlfriends that he was cheating on his wife with got pregnant and tried to break up with him because he was a sociopath, he ended up hacking into my server and writing a program, because he was extremely intelligent, that would text her every 10 seconds saying, you have chlamydia, you're this, you're that. And I found this out because I got dinged on my server for all this activity. And I ended up calling her and saying, do you know who this person is? And then I figured out, this is my former programmer, and locked down my server. So there's doing little notes that you do in your teens, and then there's taking it to that level and beyond. Yes. And, that's obviously someone with – they could have an addiction issue. They could have obsessive compulsive disorder. There's so many things that could be going on. And like you said, Dr. Huber, I grew out of it. He didn't.
Right. And that's what's really important. You know, if you're at that point, you know, I don't want, you know, some situation that is going to not help somebody grow and at the same time scare or somehow threaten somebody else. I mean, we all make mistakes. We learn best by making mistakes. So when we think about that, and, you know, there's part of this that is about just being human and that human experience. But when you confront the individual and they don't learn from it, it becomes very threatening and can be damaging to individuals. And that's when you have to start looking at, do I need to report this to the police? Do I need to file a report just so there's a record? I don't want to press charges. I just need people to know that this person is doing this kind of thing. Or do you need to be hounding the police? You got to go arrest this person. And that's an individual choice, individual decision that you need to make, probably with maybe your family, your attorney, and the police department themselves.
I have a question for you on that, Dr. Huber. I know that I was around someone who was trying to be a celebrity, and I'd say D-list and as far as they got. And I know when I was around him, I felt this compulsion. I needed to stay in contact, and you know, constantly needed to. The bar was every time I met one of his expectations, he raised the bar higher, and I know what disorder he had. But what was interesting was I was blaming myself for this, and oh my gosh, what am I doing? I don't. And when I was away from him, I did not behave that way with anyone else in my life. And what I was a big aha moment for me was when I was sitting with him, and he said, "Oh yeah, all my life I've had people that just get obsessed with communicating with me, and they, you know, they don't leave me alone." And he had a big smile on his face. And I realized, oh, because you plant those seeds, you create that behavior. And that's why I have so many people say goodbye and don't stick around you, because they feel that unhealthiness and they don't want to continue the relationship. So can you kind of go into, you know, that side of things? I have to take responsibility for what I did in that situation. And I did, I got out of it. But someone that does that they inspire that in other people.
Well, the only real control we have in this world is how we react to what happens to us. We can't make somebody to perform in a certain way, and we can't make you know, the sun not come up on Sunday morning. We can't do any of that stuff. Things happen to us. Other people happen to us. And you know, you talk about taking responsibility, and when you start to take responsibility for your actions, no matter how positive or negative they are in your life, you start to affect change in big ways, and it empowers people. And when individuals get in trouble for behaviors, we're kind of taught to blow it off. It's not my fault. It's somebody else's fault. And the fact is, when you do that, you're not going to get better. The world's not going to get better for you. The best thing to do is stand up and say, you know, I made some bad decisions here. Let's deal with that and help me learn how not to make those bad decisions again. And you know, this whole thing of individuals taking responsibility for your behavior is the key. You can't control the other person. And maybe you could have handled things better, but that also goes back on that other person. You know, they maybe should not have handled things in the manner that they did. You can't change that.
Yeah, it was really telling to hear, oh my gosh, there's a pattern in this person's life of people doing that. And it was, I mean, I was being stalked by this person too. So it was really interesting to go, okay, so what is going on here? And then to just get out of it and hear people say later, this happened to me too with this person. And I thought, okay, well, you need to take responsibility for how you responded and then get out of that relationship, because this happens with this guy all the time. So, yeah, that was an interesting thing to go through and then realize, I don't want this. This is not what I want to be around.
Here's a peculiar question. Uh-huh. Do you think there are 2 or 3 healthy benefits of stalking? Because think about it this way. You are focusing your time and attention on one particular person. In a world of distractions, cell phones, cars, DVDs, video games, the fact that you can hold your attention span on one person, I mean, there's got to be something positive there where you can utilize that to go for something else. I'm wondering if the people who are very successful, theoretically speaking, carry a lot of qualities similar to stalkers, only they're not utilizing that talent to infringe upon another person. Do you think that some of these same mental health qualities within a stalker – in a way, are actually part of people who are successful? Let's start with you, Dr. Huber.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, because essentially what you're asking is, on a bigger scale, is a mental health disorder, can that be beneficial for you? And yes, it can. Look at Elon Musk. He talks about his bipolar disorder, his mania, and then his depression. And with his mania, he would get fixated on a problem and work on that problem for 7, 8, 9, 10 days straight with very little of any sleep. And that allowed him to work through things that if he'd have taken the normal breaks and gone out to dinner with friends and slept a full 8 or 9 hours and all, he would have never accomplished those things. And being driven like that can help in a lot of situations. I mean, you know, in your profession, Ryan, as a producer, and you know, you're out there, you're trying to take the people who hire you and get their message out into the world, and that ability to maintain that pressure is what makes you so successful. Now, I've met you. I don't think you have, you know, I've met you face to face, spent time with you, all these different things. You don't have the signs and symptoms that I typically look at when I see somebody down the street or when I meet at a meeting or whatever. I go, man, there's something wrong with that person. I don't see that in you. And, you know, well, if you want an evaluation, you're going to be in town. Yeah. Well, you know, if you want an evaluation, I know you're going to be in a town in a couple of months. We can put some time aside and we can run some IQ tests and give you the MMPI, maybe some more shocking plot stuff. And we can nitpick if you really want to do that. But, you know, and it might be fun for you too, something you might have never done. But, you know, you don't give the typical telltale signs of having some issue associated with your ability to function in this world.
All right. Well, that concludes our show for today. And I want to thank Dr. John Huber, Miss Kristen Sonata Walker. Again, Dr. Huber's birthday, national holiday. Stop going to work. You don't have to go anymore. Your boss is going to be cool to say, yeah, it's Dr. Huber's birthday. So don't worry about it. Yes, you get paid leave. It's okay. And learn more about Dr. Huber by going to his website at mainstreammentalhealth.org. And learn more about Miss Kristen Sonata Walker by going to her website at mentalhealthnewsradio.com. Thank you for being with us, and we'll see you back here next week.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.